As our study of the book of Proverbs continued, we're now still in the third chapter. Last time we got into this 20th verse. And let me read verses 19 and 20. The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth. By understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down the dew. And he's simply saying here that he took his knowledge to create this great universe and everything that's in it. Here by the knowledge of God. He says, by his wisdom, the depths were broken up, and the clouds dropped down the dew. The depths were divided, in other words. The oceans were divided from each other by his knowledge. The clouds produce rain. The hydrodynamic cycle is so necessary for our very existence. It comes by the knowledge of God. This universe is so orderly that man can put men on the moon with a rocket. And the reason the space program can work with the computers and send the rocket in the right place at the right time is because God established very precise laws. God made them by his wisdom and knowledge. They did not just happen. We need to recognize the wisdom and intelligence of God. He wants us to know more of his knowledge and of his ways. That is why the wisdom and knowledge of God have such a high priority among the things he wants us to have. Therefore, happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding, he says. For by this he will be furnished unto every good work, 2 Timothy 3:16-17. Jesus Christ is that wisdom by whom the world were made and still consists. He has the power to bring about all the previously mentioned promises of long life, riches, and honor, for all the wealth of heaven and earth is his. From verses 16 through 20, Solomon has been telling those who have the wisdom and understanding of God, and remember it, to be happy, that this is a source of happiness. He now again begins to exhort us to keep this wisdom. He assures us that we will have great benefit by doing so. Verse 21 says, my son, let not them depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. We should always have God's wisdom and understanding in our view. Let them not depart from thine eyes. Let not your eyes ever depart from God's wisdom to look toward the ungodly wisdom, the wisdom that leads to sin. Have God's wisdom and understanding always in mind. Do not forget them. Be ever thinking of them and conversing about them. And never imagine that you have looked upon them long enough so that it's now time to lay them aside. But as long as you live, continue to study and renew your acquaintance with them. These words of God's wisdom should always be in the heart, for it is in that treasury, the hidden man of the heart, that we must keep sound wisdom and discretion. We must keep the principles and ways of this wisdom. It is the wealth that is worth keeping. He next shows some of the benefits of keeping the laws of God, which are his wisdom. Verse 22, so shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. We see here the great advantage God's wisdom gives us when we keep it. It will be life to thy soul, he says, verse 22. It will make you more lively to do your duty when you tend to become lazy and neglectful. It will rescue you from depression when trouble comes. It will mean spirited life. Life to the soul is life indeed. It shall be grace to thy neck, verse 22. And this has several shades of meaning. First of all, the word neck actually means throat, so it'll taste good to you, or it will give grace to all that you say. It'll give you the correct words to use when you speak. That's what God's wisdom does. He next shows that God's wisdom and understanding gives one safety and security. Verse 23 says, then shall thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. Good people are taken under God's special protection. This is a great benefit to them. They're safe and may be made at ease. If God's will is our companion, it will show us a good way to go. Then shalt thou walk in thy way safely, he says. This protection of God's grace keeps one from falling into trouble or sin. Wisdom will direct us into and keep us in the safe way, and will keep us as far as we may be from temptation. As we walk in wisdom, we have a holy security. The way of duty is the way of safety. When in danger of falling, God's wisdom will keep us so that our foot shall not stumble. at those things which are an offense to many. We are further assured of God's protection in verse 24, which says, when thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. The night time is when many persons have fears and terrors. Sleepless nights are a plague to many. Yet here he promises to remove fear when we lie down, if we keep his wisdom. We receive great benefit when fear is removed, since it is a major cause of sleep disturbance. The fear may be in any of many forms. May be afraid of fire or thieves or intruders or any of the terrors of darkness. The way to have a good night is to have a good conscience. Then the sleep of the wise and godly person is sweet, he says. When keeping the commandments of God, one can lay down and not have to sit up to keep guard. One can sleep, and the sleep will be refreshing and sweet, not being disturbed by troubles from within or without. Psalms 4, verse 8, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. We are also told that when we have the wisdom and good choices of God, that God is with us in our greatest difficulties and dangers. Verse 25, be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked, when it cometh. Sudden fear is the danger which comes upon us suddenly, unexpectedly, and unprepared for. Dangers are the most frightening of all dangers. The things that surprise us, giving no time for thought, so that we're not able to prepare ourselves, are most likely to put us into a state of confusion. But this is the time when the true wisdom will call upon and depend upon the Lord, as well as upon his own abilities. He also says to not be afraid of the desolation of the wicked. This may mean to have no fear of the harm the wicked want to bring on the righteous. We're not to fear what the wicked intend to be bad for us. God's our protector if we walk in his wisdom. But the desolation of the wicked may very well refer to the destruction which will come upon the wicked after the great judgment of God. The righteous who walk in God's wisdom are entirely protected from that destruction and that desolation which belongs to the wicked. This desolation of the wicked will come, and saints have no reason to fear, because they will not be in any danger of this desolation brought by God on the wicked. The danger of hellfire is the worst of all dangers, and should be feared more than any other thing, but not so for the people of God. Verse 26, for the Lord shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. Truly, God's way is the safe way. The Lord is our confidence. He guards our path. He guides us so that we walk in the safe way. Beginning with verse 27, the subject in chapter 3 changes. He has been talking of man's duty to God, but beginning with verse 27, the instruction has to do with man's duty to man. In the Ten Commandments given by Moses, the first four are man's duty to God, and the last six are man's duty to man. And so God requires that we have a balance in our lives and recognize duties to God and duties to man. Verses 26 and 7 say, withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when thou hast it by thee. True wisdom includes the doing of our duty towards man as well as towards God. Here we have several items of wisdom which pertain to our neighbor. We must render to all their due that which is within our power, whether in justice or in charity, and we should not delay to do it. He says it very clearly in verse 27, we withhold not good from those to whom it is due when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. You could withhold either because of a lack of love for the person or because of too much love for your money. If you do not have it to give, it's not expected. But if you have the ability to help and refuse, or if you simply misuse what you have, this is to withhold. Withhold it not implies that it was called for and expected, but the hand is drawn back and the bowels of compassion are shut up. We must not hinder others from doing it, nor refuse to do it ourselves. If you have it today and see it is in your power to do it, say not to your neighbor, go thy way for this time. and come at a more convenient season. I will then see what I can do. Tomorrow I will give, or maybe you will have acquired it by another means. Do not make excuses to shift off a duty that should be done. Do not unnecessarily keep your neighbor in pain and in suspense. Do not strive to show the power the giver has over the beggar. But we should readily and cheerfully give good to those to whom it is due. This phrase, them to whom it is due, can actually be interpreted as to the lords and owners of it. That is, those who are actually entitled to it. This requires several things of us. First of all, we must pay our just debts without fraud or delay. Second of all, we should give proper wages to those who have earned them. The laborer is worthy of his hire. And thirdly, to provide for our kin and those who depend on us, for to them it is due. Fourthly, to give proper due to the church. And fifthly, to give what is due to the state. Sixthly, to be ready to carry out all acts of friendship and humanity, to truly be a good neighbor. This is simply doing unto others as we would have them do unto us. And seventhly, to give to the poor and needy. If others lack the necessary supports of life, and we have the ability to supply them, we must look upon it as something due to them and not withhold it. A debt to the poor is just as much a debt as a debt to anyone else. Another great principle of our duty to others is that we must never intend to do any harm or hurt anybody. Verse 29 says, "Devise not evil against thy neighbor, seeing he dwelleth securely by thee." Do not plan how to bring about any harm to him openly or secretly. Do not intend to injure his body, his property, or his good name. For he dwells securely by thee. He has not provoked you, nor has any jealousy of you, and does not suspect you of doing him evil. He therefore is off guard. Cursed be he that smiteth his neighbor secretly. Deuteronomy 27:24. Next, we are warned against being needlessly quarrelsome and litigious. Verse 30 says, "Strive not with a man without cause if he had done thee no harm. Do not contend for that which you are not entitled to have. Do not take offense and strive over something which was a mere harmless oversight. Never trouble the neighbor with frivolous complaints and accusations when there's no real harm done to you or none worth speaking of. Or you may have resolved the matter in a friendly way. A lawsuit must be the last refuge, for our main duty and our main interest, as much as lies in us, is to live peaceably with all men. When all accounts are balanced, it'll be found that there is little to be gained by striving. The New Testament is very plain on this subject. Romans 12:18-21, "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peace with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if an enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Do not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." When we have been wronged, let us first go to God and let the principles of God's wisdom guide us. We're next warned not to envy the prosperity of evildoers who get gain by ungodly means. Verse 31 says, "Envy thou not the oppressor, and choose none of his ways. Though he may be rich and great, though he live in ease and pleasure, and make all about him to stand in awe of him, yet do not think he is a happy person because of this. He has gotten his gain by being an oppressor of others. Do not wish yourself to be in his condition." Verse 31 says, "Choose none of his ways. Do not imitate him, nor use the means he uses to enrich himself. Never think of doing as he does, even though you could get equal gain by doing so. All that he has been bought with a great price." Now, in order to show what little reason saints have to envy sinners, Solomon here, in the last four verses of this chapter, compares the condition of saints and sinners. We have a comparison. He sets the one by the other so we may see how happy saints are, though they be oppressed, and how miserable the wicked are, though they be the oppressors. We want to be judged according to God's standards and not as the world judges. Those who, according to God's mind, are in the right. And if we be of God's mind, we shall see that saints are so happy themselves that they have no reason at all to envy any sinner, though his temporal condition may be ever so prosperous. First of all, sinners are hated by God, and the saints are beloved of God. Verse 32 says, "For the froward is abomination to the Lord, but his secret is with the righteous." The froward are those who are ungovernable and disobedient. They are going fromward, away from God. Their lives are a contradiction to his will. They are an abomination to the Lord. An abomination is something which is disgusting. It is an abhorrence to God, which is to hate or to loathe. God hates nothing he has made, yet he abhors those who have thus marred themselves. The righteous have no reason to envy them, for they have his secret with them. His secret is also translated as his secret counsel. The word can also mean a consultation. This means that the righteous have God to confide his will to them, and they have the wisdom of God, which the disobedient are ignorant of. The righteous are God's favorites. He has that communion with them, which is a secret to the world, and in which they have a joy unknown to the disobedient. God communicates to them the secret tokens of his love. His covenant is with them. They know his mind and the meanings and intentions of his will better than others can. Shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? Genesis 18:17. Here God was fixing to go down to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham was wondering what was going on, and God let Abraham know. He wouldn't hide from Abraham. He kept confidence with Abraham and disclosed his secret to him. Another reason saints should not envy sinners is that sinners are under the curse of God, they and their houses. Verse 33 says, "The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, but he blesseth the habitation of the just." The wicked has a house, and it may be a strong and expensive mansion, but the curse of the Lord is upon it. It is in it. And though the affairs of the family may prosper, yet the very blessings are cursed. Malachi 2:2, "If you will not hear, if you will not lay it to heart to give glory unto my name, saith the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already, because you do not lay it to heart." Psalm 106:15, speaking of the children of Israel, "He gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul." Zechariah 5:4, speaking of God's curse, "I will bring it forth, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief, and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name, and it shall remain in the midst of his house, and shall consume it with the timber thereof, and the stones thereof." The curse may work silently and slowly, but it's doing its dreaded work. But the just have a habitation which he blesses. The word for habitation may range in meaning from a nice dwelling to a sheep stall or a den for animals. It could be a very humble dwelling, but God blesses it. His blessings are continued all year long. The curse or blessing of God is upon the house, according to whether the inhabitants are wicked or godly. And it is certain that a blessed family, though poor, has no reason to envy a cursed family, though rich. Another reason why saints should not envy sinners is, God works against sinners, but helps saints. Verse 34 says, "Surely he scorneth the scorners, but he giveth grace unto the lowly." Whatever attitude we have toward God, he will return the same attitude toward us. You can paraphrase it like this: do unto God as you would have God do unto you. To scorn is to mock or to scoff. When we violate God's command, when we willfully disobey and refuse to be controlled by God, when we mock his government and his authority, when we show a disregard for his will and his desire, when we place more emphasis on the worldly things than on the things of God, then we become scorners. "Surely he scorneth the scorners," verse 34. In other words, he's going to mock the scorners. Psalms 2:4 says, "He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh, and the Lord shall have them in derision." Psalms 18:26, "With the poor thou shalt show thyself pure, and with the froward thou shalt show thyself froward." God's going to return to you what you give to him. 1 Peter 5:5, "For God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble." And we see that those who humble themselves shall be exalted. For he gives grace to the lowly, verse 34. The lowly are the ones who submit to God's will. They highly respect his authority and give him reverential awe. To them his name is truly hallowed, and the treatment they give to God is given to them by God. Psalms 18:25, with the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful. With an upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. And yet another reason why the righteous should not envy the unrighteous is that the final state of sinners will be everlasting shame, while the final state of saints will be endless honor. Verse 35 says, the wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the promotion of fools. Although the saints may seem to be obscure now, yet they are wise people and act wisely in their actions toward man and God. And though their way of life makes them subject to the ridicule and reproaches of others, yet they are sure to inherit glory at last, a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, as mentioned by the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. The saints shall have this reward by inheritance. God gives them grace, verse 34, and grace is glory. Psalms 84:11. For the Lord is a sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Yet sinners are fools, for they are preparing disgrace for themselves. While they live as if they were going to be honored, their end will show how foolish their lives were. Shame shall be their promotion. To be promoted to shame is nothing to strive for, and it is certainly not a pleasing reward. We conclude our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.